Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
And we're back with another episode of the Startup Hustle. This is Matt Watson, your host for the day. Today, we are continuing our series about the top startups in Cincinnati. And today, we're talking to Coterie Insurance. How do we pronounce this, David? You better tell me.
It's Coterie Insurance.
Coterie Insurance. See, I got it right. We should have pre-gamed this. I'm way off. Well, you're thank good. You so much. And so with David today, David McFarlane. David, before we get started, I do want to remind everybody that today's episode of Startup Hustle is powered by Fullscale.io. Helping software developers is difficult. Fullscale can help you build a software team quickly and affordably and has the platform to help you manage that team. Visit Fullscale.io to learn more. Well, David, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Good to be here, Matt.
How does it feel to be a top startup in Cincinnati?
It feels good. In general, we strive to be a top startup in whatever we do. We're fairly passionate people who get after things, and we particularly like the Cincinnati area, and you know, hopefully we can continue to add to it. But overall, it's a good feeling.
I'm going to guess Cincinnati is not a place that people think there are a lot of startups. What's the startup community look like in Cincinnati? I'm going to guess probably kind of similar to Kansas City, but what's it like in Cincinnati?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm not from Cincinnati. I'm a little bit different than the other Cincinnati folks in that respect. Cincinnati typically has a pretty homegrown population, let's say. I've been fairly transient most of my life growing up in South Florida and a little bit in Georgia.
Wait a second. You're saying that Cincinnati is not the top of the list for people when they're trying to figure out where to move to?
It's shocking. I know. I was in more of a startup scene before coming to Cincinnati. I was in Chicago, downtown Chicago, and I had just helped start another startup called ClearCover. And, 2 years into that, I wanted to execute on my vision on the commercial insurance side. And I looked around at a few different areas. I really liked the Midwest, and I happened to know someone from the insurance space who was in Cincinnati. Cincinnati also had a pretty strong commercial insurance scene. And that person connected me to what I'd say the newer startup scene in Cincinnati, maybe growing startup scene in Cincinnati. And the people were just fantastic. It's small. It's a small startup scene, but the people are really solid, good supportive community, and decided to move me and my wife and kids and start the company there.
Wow. So you decided to move there and start the company there.
That's right.
That's awesome. Very cool. Well, so tell us more about your background
and how you got into this particular company and the problem you're trying to solve.
Yeah, happy to. You know, for anyone listening, you know, this will at least, you know, listen to this at least while you're about to go to bed, because I'm about to talk about insurance, and that'll help put you to sleep. I'm a recovering actuary, and I started off in the National Council on Compensation Insurance, which is not half as exciting as it sounds, but it was a good time. I learned a lot of stuff there. Saw a lot of the inefficiencies in the insurance space, and that was down in Florida that I was there. And I kind of had this idea of how I wanted to start an insurance company based on that. And from there, went into actuarial consulting in Georgia, then helped do some of the first embedded insurance stuff and jewelry insurance in Wisconsin, and then started a personal auto insurtech in Chicago. And all of this, like, with the idea of eventually starting something one day on the commercial insurance side. And then kind of timing and my education, at least in terms of getting experience in this stuff, lined up really well to start Coterie in September of 2018.
Okay. And so what was the key problem you guys were trying to solve? What was that differentiator for you guys?
Yeah, the biggest issue is, I mean, at a fundamental level, small businesses are massively underserved in commercial insurance. And where they're not underserved, it's just like a complete hassle to get. And the main reason is like, if you look at agents and brokers who are servicing this business right now, they spend as much time on a $50,000 insurance policy as they do a $5,000 insurance policy.
Absolutely.
So why in the world are they going to spend any time on that $5,000 insurance policy where they're making a tenth of the amount? So they just say, like, get lost, essentially, right? They're going to do it in a very tactful, nice way, but it's... To the end customer, they're getting glossed over. And so the agent and broker has no incentive to go after the 32 million small businesses that are out there. So what needed to happen was not necessarily a change with the insurance distributor, the agents and brokers. What needed to happen was a change with the insurance manufacturer, right? The carriers, right?
Yeah.
And how they were hooking into the distributors. And so our idea was to tackle the small commercial space using technology and data to make it so that these agents and brokers could actually bind these policies in minutes, right? And unlock the massive total addressable market that is the small commercial space. And so that's the problem that we solve at Coterie.
So a good example of this would be like just general business insurance policy, right? What would be like the most simplest example?
Yeah. So like, let's say you're starting your small business and you want to, you know, it's a retail shop, like, right. Like you're selling stuff, selling t-shirts, whatever.
Okay.
So you go and you rent some store space, right? And right when you go to sign the lease, it says, by the way, you need an insurance policy, which 99% of the leases out there say you need to have an insurance policy in order to lease this. Like, okay. So you go to your agent and broker and they basically say, like, look, we'll get around to it eventually. And it's going to take the agent and broker, you know, hours to go through this underwriting process and all that other stuff. Whereas with Coterie, you know, our first iteration of product, we had people binding policies in 7.9 minutes.
Okay.
Now it's cut that even in half to 3.7 minutes. So
is that because before the brokers didn't know what product to match up that knew that the underwriting was easy or whatever? Like, was it like a product selection issue?
No, I mean, it's a combination of things. Really, it's like what the agents and brokers do is they go to the insurance manufacturers and they're like, hey, this person needs a business owner's policy, which has like general liability and property coverage. They're a t-shirt shop, right? Like, help me get them coverage. And the insurance manufacturer, the carriers, they're like, well, we've got more questions. You know, are they selling these types of graphic tees? Is it polos? Are they open on Sundays? Are they all these questions, right? Do they serve alcohol? Like, why are you asking? Do they have a swimming pool? Right? Like, no, it's a t-shirt shop, right? And yeah. what we do is, instead of asking all those questions, we just reach in and we grab data on all of these people. And we say, okay, we have 2,000 to 3,000 pieces of information. We understand the classification of this exposure. We understand that 99.9% of the time, T-shirt shops don't have playgrounds and swimming pools. So we're not going to ask you those types of questions. And the questions that we really care about, we're going to go get the data for it. And so on top of all of that, on top of just like making that whole process much more efficient, we also say, by the way, this is a T-shirt shop, and this is our recommendation on the coverage. So even if the broker and agent isn't familiar with what they should do, we make the recommendations for them.
Okay.
And so that's the big problem that we solve.
So how are you guys able to answer some of those questions, right? Wouldn't some of the insurance, they would want to know like, hey, what is their monthly revenue or their average cost per product? Like somebody could steal or how much inventory they have in stock. Or I mean, I could see like there could be a lot of questions like that. Like, do they sell fake Louis Vuitton merchandise, right? Like there could be like all these crazy questions, right?
Yeah.
And so that makes sense. Like I get it. But so how would you be able to answer those? Like you would have to get those, some of those answers from the business owner, right?
Yeah, and it's important to distinguish, you know, what information from the business owner do you need to know for like just, you know, general curiosity, and what information do you need to know in order to price the product, price the risk transfer in an actuarially adequate way. And there's a lot of debates on that, which is clearly demonstrated by the fact that, you know, many carriers do this in a number of ways. What we did was we set up with a philosophy of focusing on the speed and simplicity of it. So
I love it.
Let's leverage the data to first, the data that we can get so that we can use that to price and make that the primary thing we get rather than burdening the agent, broker, and policyholder with answering these questions. And when you do that, when you don't just say, let's just ask. Instead, you say, let's dig in and find the data that we can use to price it. It forces you to build products in a new way. It's mm-hmm. kind of like the difference between, hey, we were just talking about kids, right? Like, there's the kid who comes and just like, hey, dad, how do I do this? Versus the kid who's actually just going to read the book themselves and try and figure out the answer. It's a shift in paradigm.
But you guys were able to get the manufacturers of the insurance to change to what you needed, or how did you maneuver that, right? Because you're not providing the insurance yourself, right?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, so we call ourselves an insurance manufacturer, and what we did...
You do, okay.
What we did was we create the products, we file them with the states, we service the claims, we do everything ourselves. So,
you're an actual carrier.
We're not a carrier, though. That's the difference. What we are is MGA, MGU, a managing general underwriter, managing general agency. And what we are is we have carrier partners who basically give us the authority to create insurance products and handle them ourselves. So that's why we call ourselves an insurance manufacturer. We don't API out to other carriers and sell their products.
Okay.
Because we want to create a really novel experience that relies on data first for the end customers and the distributors.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, what you're saying is traditionally a lot of this was done manually by the carriers. Like they're like, you know, they have to stop and manually make these decisions about the type of a business that is and the risk that could be associated. Like it was all manual labor and somebody deciding those things.
Yep, that's right.
It wasn't very systematic.
Yeah, it takes hours and days in that process. And thing is, it's not that they're bad. But what happened was most of the time small commercial was these pretty large policies. Like honestly, it was more like mid-market, like middle-sized commercial. And then what happened was it was like, well, I should probably get this for my small business. And the carriers were like, okay, but they're going to have to go through the same painful process as these larger businesses. And it just never really got refactored, right? And so you have these small $2,000 to $5,000 policies going
to some degrees.
Go ahead.
To some degrees, what jumped into my head is it almost feels like, you know, when you go to buy something today, they can run a credit report on you and very quickly, you know, systematically come to an answer, right? And it's almost like you can almost do the same thing for these certain scenarios with the insurance. It's like we've automated so much of this data collection that we can very quickly make smart decisions without manually making a bunch of gut decisions.
That's exactly right.
That's the analogy that jumped into my head. So, well, this is very, very cool. I love it. as a business owner in the past, buying insurance has always been a giant pain in the ass. And I always feel like I don't even know what kind of insurance I need until, as you mentioned earlier, like, oh, well, I signed my lease and they said I have to have this thing. And it's the same way. Like, hey, I get this giant customer and they're going to give us a bunch of money. But then in the, you know, the redlining of the contract, it's like, oh, you also need a E&O insurance and D&O and insurance. You need this, and you need this, and some tech liability thing and whatever. And I think it's always a giant pain in the ass and I have no idea what I need. How do small companies, you know, small startups figure that part of it out too?
I think agent brokers can help out a lot with that. I mean, also our technology helps out a bunch. It makes those policy recommendations based on what you're actually doing and the data that we get in. It says like, hey, we realize, you know, you're a restaurant, right? And you're a restaurant that's open between these hours and has, you know, probably these type of clientele, these type of sales. Well, based on that, you need this type of coverage with this type of, you know, additional add-ons to those coverage, to that coverage. That's a pretty powerful tool. Another cool thing that we do that helps, especially, you know, new businesses, is we not only go through our agents and brokers, we also go through more non-traditional channels. So like if you're using your accounting platform, like a QuickBooks or something like that, we actually meet customers in there and say like, oh yeah, well, based on the information that we get from these different partners and whatnot, you probably need this type of coverage, and it can actually all be bound right there in the software that you run your business on, which is pretty neat.
Wow. So is that your key go-to-market strategy, is those partnerships?
Partnerships in general are our go-to-market strategy. We don't do anything D2C.
Okay. So you say B2C, but it would really be B2B, right?
It's D2C, direct to consumer, or direct to businesses. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So it's really business to business, but for you, they're like the end consumer.
Yeah.
they would be the end consumer.
We jokingly say we're B2B to small B.
Right? Yeah. So you, the example you gave earlier was QuickBooks. So you have a partnership with QuickBooks?
Yeah, we do. Yeah. They've been a great partner with us for almost 2 years now. Really, really solid team over there.
So one of the things we talk about all the time is those types of partnerships and the complexity of those. Was that a really hard partnership to get?
Yes. I don't want to give ourselves hardly any credit, though. Like, what happened was it was really right place, right time. And not all partnerships are like that. Many, many more of them are more enterprise sales focused. But it happened that QuickBooks or Intuit was spinning up this entrepreneurial division that was focused on insurance. We happened to have a product that met exactly what they were doing. Some SaaS tools, like, they want to create this ecosystem for their small commercial clients. Mm-hmm. And we fit what they wanted to do in terms of truly integrating a product into their software. And it hit really well, and we decided to start working together. So that really wasn't our efforts. It was a couple of people who knew each other and made the right intros at the right time.
So once you landed that big deal with them, did you guys have to, I'm just curious, because this is always a topic that people bring up as a go-to-market strategy that's really difficult to execute on. Did you guys have to make a whole lot of changes to your product and your APIs and the way you do business and all that kind of stuff? Did you have to bend to their will to make this work? Or was it just pretty much, hey, we're ready to go and just run with it?
Thankfully, not too much. We built everything with a, you know, API, microservices first mentality. And mm-hmm. there's definitely some customization that we've done for Intuit and other big partners. But in general, we haven't had to bend over backwards. It was very commensurate with the overall thesis of our business. Okay. So it's just execution and nothing too out of the ordinary.
So what other kind of, I'm curious now, what other kind of go-to-market partners do you have? Like, I could see somebody like Paychex and like companies like that that are, deal with a lot of small businesses would be a good fit for you.
Yep. Yeah. So our favorite verticals are merchant services, accounting firms, payroll. Mm-hmm. Really, how we look at it is, where are there lots of small commercial customers, right? Like small businesses. Where is their data, right? With data-rich environments that we can leverage for the pricing and whatnot. And three, where is there at least some type of insurance trigger? And not all three have to be true, but two of the three should probably be true.
Sure.
And like QuickBooks, there's not an explicit insurance trigger there, but can we create triggers based on the data that they do have? For example, maybe they go from a residential address to a commercial address. That's reflected in QuickBooks. We can then say, hey, you probably signed a lease that says you need insurance. By the way, we can help you with that. Maybe they go from a zero employee count to a non-zero employee
right.
count.
Right. Sure.
Those types of triggers where we can say like, yep, this is something we can use to target on the insurance side.
Very smart. Very smart. I love it.
Thanks.
Well, I do want to remind everybody that today that our sponsor today is fullscale.io. Finding expert software developers doesn't have to be difficult, especially when you visit fullscale.io, where you can build a software team quickly and affordably using the FullScale platform to define your technical needs and then to see what available developers, testers, and leaders are ready to join your team today. Visit fullscale.io to learn more. I'm curious, David, what is the tech community look like in Cincinnati? The only software developer I know that has anything to do with Cincinnati left and came and worked for me like 20 years ago. So there are no developers left, I guess. He was the only one. What is the community like there? I'm just curious, having a tech company in Cincinnati, what does the local talent pool look like there?
I'm not a great person to ask about this because, one, we're a pretty remote company.
Okay.
We've always been remote, even before COVID. I'm not trying to pretend to be a hipster or anything like that. It's just how we were.
Oh, you're totally a hipster. It's okay. Keep going. I'm just kidding.
My four kids and going to bed at 8 o'clock makes me a hipster.
Wild man.
Yeah, you know me. The environment here, I think, frankly, what I know about it, I think it's a fairly healthy tech environment. There are good schools here that result in good entry-level tech workers. I think NKU is a really strong one in particular. And then, of course, you have Dayton up north and the University of Cincinnati and Xavier, other good institutions. We also have some just, gems of human beings, like people who work hard and are just amazing folks. And, that Midwestern mentality.
Heck yeah.
That's right.
Heck yeah. We're from the Midwest, baby. We get it. We're a different breed here. Totally different than West Coast and East Coast people.
It's different. South Florida.
Yeah, it's different.
I grew up in South Florida, so I can hate on it a little bit. But I've been really impressed with that Midwestern work ethic. It's fantastic.
Absolutely.
So, again, I can't speak too much to it, but okay. I think there's a pretty strong environment here.
So you guys have about how many employees?
140.
And they're mostly all over the U.S., everywhere, just random?
Yeah, I'd say like 15% is here in Cincinnati, and okay. The rest are scattered everywhere throughout the U.S.
You have a small office in Cincinnati?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It's convenient, too. Our small office is right by one of my wife and kids' favorite parks, so occasionally I'll get to walk right over there and see them sometimes in the middle of the day.
Yeah, well, the whole remote versus non-remote part of this is fascinating. So the company I work at today is primarily all in office, is in office. I work remote out of Kansas City. They're based in Minneapolis, but it's interesting, the dynamics of all of it. And so many people are used to working remote now that they're never going to go back to the office. But we also know there's a certain percentage of people, there's no way they can work remote. So it's an interesting dynamic that we have. And a local company I was talking to here the other day, they did it so they are in office like 2 days a week and then remote the other 3 days. And like some people really struggle with that. It's like they work 2 days a week and the other 3 days, they think they basically like have off. I don't know. It's an interesting time that we're going through right now with everybody trying to figure out how this remote thing, works. So,
yeah, I'm really curious at how working is going to shape itself going forward.
Yeah,
because you're going to have certain people who you can trust, who are going to work hard, and you basically give them clear objectives and key results, and they're going to work no matter where they are, whether it's in an office or remote, and they will gravitate to companies who will treat them like an adult.
Yes. And then there are some people in this world that can never act like adults.
Exactly. And they're going, what's going to happen is if they try and get in those companies where they treat people like adults, they're going to get fired. They're going to get let go. Yeah. And then they're going to end up back in the corporations that just, yep. Oh, this is the way that we all go. And I'm very curious if we're going to have an increased polarization of like high performing companies and low performing companies.
Yeah. Okay. It's a difficult challenge, right? And the people you hire that, you know, work in different parts of the country, have kind of different cultural background, work ethic, all these things, right? So having a, you know, in office company in California is going to be very different than in Cincinnati, and the culture of the people and how well they work in office versus remote. Like, and then at full scale, we have nearly 300 employees in the Philippines, and they are all remote, almost 100%. And we don't have really a lot of challenges, but it's just different. My point is, it's like just different people in different parts of the country too, kind of cultural kind of work ethic differences too, that make that really come out. That's right. From what I've seen.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, so tell me more about your guys' company and the future and what you guys are doing. It looks like you've raised a fair amount of money from what I read here. Hopefully that's not a top secret.
Yeah, no, it's not. You're good.
You've so raised billions of dollars. This is crazy.
not billions.
Millions. Sorry, millions.
You're good. You're good. We've raised about $75 million to date. And we most of that has come from our Series B, which was a $50 million equity raise. The money is fantastic, right? It helps us execute on what we want to execute on. But really, I think my favorite part of the raises has been the investors that we've been able to bring on. And I think for any founders out there who are, you know, going through the process, and hopefully they're not going through the process right now. It's a brutal time. But if they are, like, remember the important parts with this, like, and that's the investors that you bring on are there to help you, right? They're not just there to funnel money into your bank account, but you can get really quality people who will help your business succeed. And that is, the money is important, but that is equally important.
So your investors, have they been strategic where they could be like resellers and go to market partners and stuff like that? Or what kind of, you know, investors have you brought on?
It's a mixture. We have some investors who are strategic in that they more so like reinsurance companies, insurance companies, stuff like that, who help us on the insurance manufacturing side. And then we have other investors who are more, you know, just VCs, private equity type stuff. And their experience in running and scaling businesses has been invaluable as we've grown.
They actually have really helped you, because a lot of times it seems like they just write a check and disappear and they don't help, but you've actually got a lot of support from them.
Yeah. Maybe that's because I, you know, annoyingly talk to them too much, but they still pick up when I call, which is nice.
Well, so before this company, had you founded any other companies before?
I was employee number two at a company called ClearCover, which is a personal auto insurtech in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And was chief actuary, head of insurance product, helped build things over there. I made it clear to the founder and CEO, Kyle, when we were talking about starting it. I was like, look, I want to learn what we need to do from a founding standpoint so that I can do this on the commercial insurance side later. And he was really supportive, helped me learn a ton about starting an insurance company and all the, you know, all the funding stuff, the reinsurance, everything like that. And we've stayed in contact. We actually had dinner in person last night. I'm here in Chicago, switching up scenery a little bit. But he's just been a huge supporter throughout this whole process.
Well, I mean, that's the challenge of being an entrepreneur, right? Is you don't know what you don't know when it comes to a lot of these things. And you run into all these scenarios of like, I don't really know how to navigate this. I can just sort of wing it. But if you have mentors and investors and stuff like that that can help, it makes all the difference in the world.
I mean, that's life in general, right?
Yeah. It's like being a parent, man. We're both parents of four. Like, you just figure the shit out. But sometimes grandma and grandpa are huge resources. They know something.
Yeah, that's right. And like, you don't realize how smart your parents are until you have kids yourself, right?
Yeah.
It's nuts.
Yeah. Ugh. So what is the future for you guys? Where do you see this going? You see it branching out into different types of insurance, or, you know, where do you see this going?
Yeah, our focus is, you know, build and foster a world-class team to bring speed, simplicity, and service to commercial insurance. So we start off in that small commercial space. There's other venues that can really benefit from, you know, leveraging data and technology in general. We target those areas essentially by large total addressable market, as well as high expense ratios. So, like, where is insurance operating today? And, like, are they paying a hefty amount in expenses because they're manually doing things? And that's very objective data that we have available. So we can kind of say, like, yep, small commercial is the obvious first choice, massive TAM, and, you know, expenses are through the roof. And then, like, what are the other lines in commercial insurance that exhibit similar quantitative issues?
Can you fix all the problems with our health insurance?
I stay away from health insurance.
I asked you before, like, topics we could talk about or not talk about, and health insurance probably should have been on the list.
Oh, my God.
That's the type of insurance it's always – nobody wants to go there.
Well, like, okay, put it this way. If Jeff Bezos, Diamond, and Warren Buffett can't fix it, like, I don't know how I can
– like, you're the man. You're gonna save us all.
Golly. I mean, the problem, there's a lot of problems with it. But incentivization is definitely a major one in there. So it's messy.
All right. Well, as we start to wrap up the show here, I do want to remind everybody that today's episode was brought to you by FullScale.io. Do you need to hire software engineers, testers, or leaders? FullScale can help. We have the people and platform to help you build and manage a team of experts. When you visit fullscale.io, all you need to do is answer a few questions and let our platform match you up with our fully vetted, highly experienced team of software engineers, testers, and leaders. At FullScale, we specialize in building long-term teams that work only for you. Learn more when you visit fullscale.io. So what other kind of, experience can you share with our listeners that are entrepreneurs out there trying to follow your path, trying to get to where you are? Sounds like you guys are on the cusp of being a unicorn here, is my guess. And you're doing some big things. And how can you give back and share some knowledge to everybody else?
Yeah, I'd say focus on things that are, or be willing to make the decisions that are, you know, first order negative, second order positive. That's one of the best pieces of advice that I was given. And what I mean by that is, like, it's true for business, is true for life in general. Like, things that are first order negative mean, like, they hurt initially, but long term they're beneficial, right?
Nobody wants to make those decisions.
No, exactly. Like, saving for retirement, right? Like, yeah, painful because I have to give up, you know, spending money now, but I'm not going to eat cat food when I'm 80. It's good, right? Like, we want to have a good retirement. And, you know, exercising, all these things are good. Having children is a really good example, right? Very painful early on, but supposedly when they're 25.
I thought that labor was painful, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, that's true. So, you know, in business, I think business is the exact same way. And there's probably some, you know, universal weird economics that happens, right? Like laws of equivalent exchange or something like that exists in the background. But most of the time, you know, when you pay up early, right, it's going to pay dividends over time. And this, I mean, we see companies all the time, you know, who accumulate tons of tech debt, right? Tech debt is largely because we're making decisions that are short-term positive, but long-term negative, right? We're saying, oh, well, we'll just cheat a little bit here. We'll take on a little bit of debt here. But over time, like, it accumulates. So, you know, there are reasons. There are sometimes reasons to make short-term positive decisions that are long-term negative. In general, I think it's most conducive if you can, but make those decisions that are short-term negative and long-term positive.
I'm just curious, do you have a good example of one of those that you had to make that was a big moment?
Yeah.
That you can share?
So, I mean, like, starting when I was starting Coterie, I was, so my wife was pregnant with our third child. She was in her third trimester, and we were in a company that was going exceedingly well, right? ClearCover was taking off like a rocket ship. I was at a really good job. And we made the decision of, hey, let's try and start this company. And you know, that's a short-term negative, hopefully long-term positive decision. But the added complexity of that is, like, I had this vision of really changing how commercial insurance is done. And we had some investors who were really interested in putting in money. And on we were pretty much there, not term sheet there, but like, you know, verbally, like, yeah, like they want to support this. And the week before we moved to Cincinnati, I was at a going away party for me and my family, and talked to one of those investors, and they said, hey, David, you know, we really like this idea, but here's the thing. This whole idea of like you being the insurance manufacturer and you creating the products, don't do that. That's too complicated. Just resell other people's products. Just API out. Don't act, you know, it's too complicated to try and file the products. Just do this other thing. And like, I could have done that. It was easier. It's a viable business model, right? But it was cheating on the true vision of the company and what I thought could be something that was truly remarkable. And so it's like, you know, no. And they're like, okay, well, we're out. Oh, that's not very good. It was short term. Yeah. I could have turned around and said like, hey, no, I'll compromise. But no, we didn't. We, without any investors, we still moved to a different state in the third trimester and craziness, and had to find new investors. And thankfully we did. And we actually signed a term sheet on August 20th with a new investor. And my son, my third child, was born on August 21st, the day after that. So it's pretty neat.
How long did it take you to find those new investors?
It took me a couple months. I mean, it was early June. And so, you know, from early June until August 20th, I had to pay people on hopes and dreams. That's about it.
That was like your lead investor that pulled out?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, but I mean, but as you have explained to me, if you would have went that other direction, it would have been more like any other marketplace, right? Where you're just trying to match up people who want insurance to, you know, which carrier policy would have got what they wanted, right? Where to really do what you wanted to do, you needed to break those walls down and like be the almost not be the carrier, as you said, but almost be like the you know, you can make the final decision of whether or not to write the policy based on all the information. Instead, otherwise you were just like a database matching people up, right?
That's exactly right. And I mean, there is a great business to be that business, but that wasn't my vision.
And like, that's not very unique. There's probably a lot of people that do that.
Yeah. A lot of them are my customers and partners, so I don't want to speak too bad.
Sure.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and, but the difference is, you know, but the key is taking it to that full digital platform that you wanted. That was the key differentiator, and you would have given up that dream and that differentiator. So good for you for sticking to it and making it work, man.
Thanks.
And now you've built something pretty amazing. So
yeah, it's been good. It's been good, thankfully. So that one is at least, you know, it was short-term negative. Medium-term, it's been positive. Hopefully we get to the long-term positive part two.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. If anybody wants to learn more about you guys, where should they go?
They should go to coterieinsurance.com. They can also check us out on LinkedIn. We're also on Instagram and, you know, a few other social media sites, but yeah, I frankly,
are you on
don't
TikTok? Do you have like cool dance videos and stuff?
Not of me. No. So maybe that'll come. Insurance getting on TikTok. That'll be an interesting one.
All right. Well, David, thank you so much for being on the show today. All right. Everybody take care. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Matt.
Take care.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.